Chapter 5. Grandma Grin. Part 2. The first was young Miss Grin. She tried not to let him in, so she stabbed him with the flattened sole. That's how her crimes begin. The next was Baby Grin, a-crying at the door. He fought off his attacker, and then simply was no more. The next was Grandpa Grin, all set to light the pyre. Yet the spirit stalked behind him, and betrayed his dark desires. Next Grandpa grabbed the shovel, his inner smile forgave. Yet all it took was one round look before he fell into his grave. Welcome back, listeners. I know it's been a while. We missed you. Let's jump right back on the thought train, shall we? Twice Jamie Mortimer had dreamt of this forgotten, fractured city, and twice she was captivated immovable on one of the many grand connecting bridges that litter the Aquitanian subterranean by this clash of futuristic, rapturous history that spread like drowned fire among the submerged buildings and rhythmic flickering lights within. It was a dead undercity, a doomed Atlantis, rusted with the blood of mad angels and charitable demons. The building's internal organs were pressurized, so it was possible for non-celestial beings to breathe and move around without hindrance, though that would depend on the upkeep of the sector in question, as the less desirable areas of the city weren't exactly up to current humanoid health and safety standards. Of these things, Jamie's psyche had forewarned her. But within her deep and twice-made slumber, her subconscious had neglected to focus on the shapes in the water. Jamie's sleepy eyes so captivated by the flickering Enochian neon signs. Those shapes revealed the true nature of this city's current purpose, a graveyard. There were dead angels in the water, their wings ripped from them, that and the occasional limb. Their faces contorted in screams of terror and finality. What the hell happened here? Rada happened. I trailed off. He what? At this point in Aquitania's cycle, there's a war raging, mostly out on the frontier. An old war, a civil war, one between the elite guard and the Lupine Crown. The Lupine Crown, that's... You mean Arthur's people? The ones that guard the frontier. Someone's been paying attention.
I have a podcast app. Did you know we're available on all current platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, and TuneIn Radio?
What's that now?
Shameless plug. Obviously.
I wasn't talking to you!
Well, then who were you?
She stopped herself as her eyes caught me pressing both of my middle and index fingers to my temples. Texting through meditation. I call it meta-texting. Jamie's face was blank.
That's truly terrible. Anyway, what are they fighting over?
Who? The voices in my head?
No. The Lupines and the elites.
What else? Honor and territory. The frontier belongs to the Lupines by birthright. They're born there, most of them live there, and a great many of them die there. But as the horizon expands, the frontier contracts. And the humanoids.
Population growth. I got it. So, what's Rada's role in this, other than the obvious profit?
He's secretly been supplying arms to the rebel Lupine factions, taking advantage of adolescent Lupine minds and convincing them to fight on the side of the elite guard, while also supplying the same weapons to the very Lupine units they defected from. The wheel turns, and on it goes.
And so, what's that got to do with this... place?
Can you see the shapes in the water?
Of course.
It takes a lot to kill an angel. It takes even more for them to decompose. This water is tainted. tainted enough to putrefy Celestials into oblivion. It was Rada's idea to supply the weapons, but it was Galdur's imagination, and others like his, that created this unnameable disgrace. To convert this entire resting city into a casual celestial tomb and dumping ground. A faceless city of death, pumping the garbage residual energy created by all this new weapon production to fuel the civil war. A perfect place, too, to dump anybody who may hope to oppose this new order that's emerging. Zerzero and I were in the middle of investigating where all the angels were disappearing to. And why, more soul drops than we'd had in about 20 generations. I honestly believed that they had turned. I assumed they had lost faith and fallen. Fall they did, but not into complacency. Into silence. You okay? Jamie asked, as the pod ground to a sudden halt and initiated the airlock procedures. I noticed the crack in her voice. No, I said. I'm not okay. I'm not okay. As we drew nigh the faceless city, we knew it was accursed. We already knew, of course, but we now could feel it, bathe in it even, if we chose, which of course we did not. At Jamie's request, we opted for the hermetically sealed loading bay that rose half a mile above the ocean floor and was about a mile long. Before the bay, expansive lay the drowned, coral-fed subterranean metropolitan, a gaggle of grand yet intrinsically damaged edifices where it seems the ageless go to die. Or rather, live out their deaths in peace. Maybe pieces. The buildings were, of course, designed to exist wholly submerged, assembled by professionals on cruisers in space, and carefully lowered down from orbit to a pre-planned position on the ocean floor, taking into account both stellar and continental drift. However, no amount of processed urocrete is built to withstand the black heart of the energy used to build these weapons. What's so bad about these weapons? I mean, how do these weapons give off enough energy to make higher angels rot to death down here, instead of rest to death? Jamie looked at me sheepishly. I smiled as we sauntered through the deserted loading bay, both stolen away by the seemingly inexplicable panorama. It's not the weapons themselves, per se. It's the sheer amount being produced. It's no secret that some of the energy used to power certain weapons used by both sides are known to be unstable. But the volume of output is turning this civil war into a battle of attrition. And no matter what any servant of the Lupine Crown may tell you, the elite guard are better at those. Much, much better. Jamie frowned, then she stopped. So, you're saying that's what's happening to this city? Grin Kara. Yeah, that. So, this is only a side effect? That's the thing.
What? What?
I'm not convinced.
Neither am I, Jamie said, her brow furrowing even deeper.
She had a frown line to rival my own when perplexed.
When we made it to the other side of the loading bay, Jamie looked back. Why is this place so big? The loading bay, I mean.
24 hours.
Huh?
Jamie looked very confused, an expression that was worth relishing. Believe me, listeners. How many higher angels every 24 hours do you think decide they no longer have the strength to carry out that which is said to be eternally beneath them, and fall further still to eternal rest? And better still, I interrupted. Jamie bared her teeth mockingly, to my mind like a stoned panther. How many gods do you think decide that their winged underlings have grown tired, grown wrong? Perhaps outlive their usefulness on the effectual plane of the Axis? Jamie sighed in utter exhaustion.
I don't know, Redgrin.
Guess. Many? Many.
So, a lot.
A lot. More than either of us can imagine on a slow day. Jamie looked around her, the inevitable question all over her face.
Well, and where the hell is everyone?
Exactly. Two. Soliti, Aquitania, cycle 41.17.
Localizing.
Ubi soliti tudinem, facinut pacem appellant. The birdman Xenia bleeped. They make a desert and call it peace. And the peace earned depends on the nature of the war won. By which side, and which still hide from suicide to genocide, they reflect the born statistics, logistics, and bloodsticks to uniforms restricted. The birdman grunted.
What's that? You're very talkative today.
Localizing.
The engine sounded as if they were clogged with sand. The birdman ground to a halt at the peak of the tallest dune he could find and engaged the handbrake. The last time he hadn't, the dune's gradient had sent Xenia nearly a mile across the wasteland towards the edge. Commence internal sanitation.
Confirmed.
Cough it up, Rusty. The birdman retrieved the interscope from his side and gazed through them to narrow Xenia's search parameters. The scope's detection filters switched as the scope zoomed. First red for a wide panoramic view, then blue on the first zoom lens, then purple as the second zoom clicked into place. The first zoom had managed to detect movements northeast of the tall dune he was now stood upon. The scope's audio capture activated, tracking the crackling sound waves emanating from what the birdman could only describe as a giant spider. Or scorpion? Something that assaulted the asphalt as it seemingly clumsily skittered in a vague easterly direction. The thing was huge, over 10 feet tall, with several morphing horns, a sharp, lethal-looking tail, and several arms that stuck out like galvanized tendrils. The tendrils then retreated inside the thing's body. What was it? It was changing, shifting. Old ones were shapeshifters. The scope zoomed in further. Tracks. Were they tracks? Impressions in the sand from a recent diamond fall, sure. But if he was reading this creature right, it was following the Carmine River, down the bank towards the Dust Falls. The birdman felt sand prickle his eye. He removed the scope to blink it away, then looked through it again. The creature was gone. Or it seemed to be gone. The scope was still picking up sound waves coming from that general area. An obscure, gaseous cloud plumed into life in place of the creature. Or perhaps the creature became it, blending into its surroundings. I'm close now, the birdman said, considering turning round and heading back in the direction of safety. The camp. His camp. A warm fire sounded good too. Just then he twisted his consideration into a decision. The universe, though, resisted him. A mere invisible blip on his life's facial structure. It wasn't as if the creature was any good to eat. He learned that the types of creatures that wander these lands rarely were. Plus, feasting on a gaseous form surely would wreak havoc on his internals. Certainly too much for his palate, to say the least. Even if this thing, whatever it was, wouldn't provide sustenance, then perhaps his changing form was adaptable in some way. The scorpion spider thing reappeared, its shape silhouetted in the smoke briefly before reforming from the subatomic level up, this time facing in his direction. It was as if their eyes met. The birdman froze. Far too dangerous, the birdman heard himself say. You must get closer. You again. Get out of my head. Tailfire falls. What? Over the edge. There was a crumbling sound. By the time he realized that the peaked section of the tall dune had decided to give way beneath his weight, or his own weight plus that of his Xenia positioned just behind him, it was too late. He landed shoulder first on the dune's unforgivingly hard embankment over 15 feet below the dune's peak, the speeder crashing down with him. Both of them tumbled down the dune's almost entirely vertical gradient, an incredibly steep incline that gave way to the near-frozen blood lake below. His screams over the next few minutes, in his own head,
echoed and rivaled those of the morphing thing he had now no choice but to chase. Many seconds of tumbling passed. It was as if the sand were pulling him towards the blood lake as he fell, twisting and turning, conspiring to make him go in head first. The logical part of him knew, more accurately assumed, that his velocity would cease well before he reached the bottom of the lake's embankment. And he was thankfully correct, up to a point. It was Xenia that prevented him from plunging into the lake, ceasing her velocity just on the bloodline, where the swirling pool met the rising sand. The embankment over the bloodline was flat enough that the birdman could stand. He righted his Xenia, then sat astride her, dusting her and himself down as best he could. Xenia had taken a partial dip in the blood pool. He attempted to wipe it off, then failed. There was a sudden throbbing pain in his head, and he began to cough. He coughed again, then again. Before he knew it, he was in a coughing fit, one which seemed never to end. Finally, he stopped, not before hacking up some liquid not dissimilar from the contents of the lake inches away. Oh yeah, the birdman said. I almost forgot.
You will remain alive. The pain in his head thundered, the voice in his head. Only so long as you are of use to me!
Twilight had almost become night. The dying extonic stars bore down on the freezing sand, making it shine in a way that no other stars could, though they didn't know it. The stars, the diamonds, and the living sand. It was cold. He needed to move. That was the only way to stay warm. One thing he knew is that the creature was moving slowly. He had to do something similar, so as not to attract any attention. Bursts of speed in light, slow movement in the darkness. And a brief cloud was all it would take. Humans were nothing more than food these days, it seemed. And there were creatures here. Creatures of nothing but air and darkness, or light so bright you'd be blind in seconds. In the morning, the mist rises up from the blood lakes beyond the sometimes viridescent and always carmine pastures of Chenri. Grey looming and sliced by the lonely windmills, it forms shapes of joyful times, before escaping to some kind of negative safety in its kin far above. While touching the water, it forms dreams of subterranean structures, cyclopean edifices that cut deep into the ocean floor and extend far down, down to places only guild creatures could call home. And later, in restless autumn rains that sigh down hard on the slanted roofs and minds of poets, the wild clouds sprinkle bits of those dreams, like endless sand on the closed lids of those who long for such places. These dreamers are those who cannot or choose not to live without the strange secrets of the deepening undersky. Secret that let slip misremembered youthful tales concerning those who came before, and who now rest, tortured, waiting and gazing, eyes still open, bloodshot with happy and sad restful tears. The Birdman is one of these dreamers. Perhaps he is or was one of the very creatures that bathes or bathed in this ever-deepening subaqueous negative spaces, whose dreams are carried up to the stars above by the looming clouds that temporarily rest on the water. As the turbines atop the hills blaze and slice the family of clouds, the Birdman tosses and turns in the morning light, smiling grimly, as is his right. Now eastward of the blood dunes in the direction of the witch canyons of Verianul, the blood river climbs suddenly, loftily and curiously, cracked and seemingly regretful in its own presence. The Birdman became the morphing creature's shadow, tracking its every movement, memorizing every resting state and place. The more the Birdman shadowed, the more he learned. He collected samples for examination, skin the creature would shed, entire epidermal layers in some cases. By light, the Birdman would observe the creature while riding hard into the dying stars of old. Whenever it reformed into something that didn't seem to make sense to its own perspective, the creature would get angry. It would burst into rages and was strong enough to tear entire chunks out of the dampening blood river embankment. That was another, easier way to track the thing's movements. Just follow the chaos it left in its wake. A severely disturbing and sudden dawning realization of the self. The ability to dissolve, at least in a physical sense, the self, and reform it anew, but only being able to remember the dark parts of yourself, and so on the surface that's the only thing you see. The Birdman understood this. The Birdman understood this well. Memories flooded the Birdman's throbbing brain as he made camp in the forgotten Ayut's widening forests of duality. He remembered the scissors, the bag, the tape, the keys, the forming scabs in day-old wounds, his injured leg, surrounding choking, smoke billowing. He was running, or trying to run. He couldn't run. He had been shot, hit by a ricochet in battle in the previous hours, a battle his side had lost. Oh boy, they had lost so damn hard. He had been one of the lucky ones, and it was time to flee. That's what he was doing. He was fleeing. But where to? There was nowhere to go. Nowhere to go but into the northern light. Yes, the northern light is calling to you. Limp into the light, Robin. Limp into the light. The Birdman awoke, finding himself on the forest floor, the lying red sun glinting through crumbling branches, internally deciduous trees that disintegrated to near complete invisibility in Akitania's fifth season. She will come to you, Robin. She will come to you. She will come to you. Not long now. 3. We found ourselves on the 86th floor of one of the tallest surface scraper buildings in the entire Undercity. A processing center for grumpy chickens. Abandoned? Mostly. Desolate and destitute? Definitely. What are we doing up here? Gordur's psychic trace hit a dead end. I've been following my ears for the last 30 minutes. You might have mentioned that. The music. Always follow the music. You're being weirder than usual. The followers afflicted your purpose, then remixed it into tricks fit for queen sick to death and want to fix it. The hell are you on about? Listen carefully. Can you hear it? Hear what? Jamie asked, traipsing behind me with a reluctant air about her person. The music, dingbat. The trail went cold at the end of loading bay, but listen. Why can't I hear it? Wrong question. And because you're not paying attention. Where is it coming from? Better question. Only a few rooms away. Then why are we stopping here? Let's keep going. Jamie glowered, eyes pointing piercingly to the back of my neck like jagged nails. You know why. I've seen your dreams. More than once. Stop being creepy. For like 2 seconds. You think that it's something that I can just turn off like a light switch? Or the snap of my fingers? I began to laugh. Shut the fuck up. Do we go across the bridge or not? You know I hate bridges. That stemmed from your fear of heights.
Shouldn't be a problem now.
But I've been meditating a lot lately. Found my favorite chamber, actually.
Congratulations. I'm sure that house is glad to be of service.
In the dream, I should be able to cross the bridge, but when I get halfway across it, it all goes wrong. Everything falls away. I don't know. It's become some kind of a weird mental block.
The future is unwritten.
Thank you for that. We continued along our path, crossing the bridge and heading through offices and meeting rooms, some of which were cordoned off by force fields and completely submerged in water. Most likely from the simple leak that went unchecked, becoming a full-blown pressurized emergency.
You know something?
I began to prance in vague time to the faded rhythm that I was now convinced was increasing in volume as we got closer to the second connecting bridge.
You're very welcome.
Jamie looked down at the torn carpet that covered the ruined office floors. It looked to her like someone had been at this once possibly plush rug with a power drill, purposefully trying to drill into the floor to flood the office.
They hate their jobs that much, constantly needing patched up. so they can keep catching those that fall by the skin of their teeth. I stopped before where the second bridge began. It was far more decrepit than the first, and would be a much more precarious journey. It lay before us like a pressurized hold of misplaced direction. I felt Jamie tense, inwardly and outwardly, her dream flooding back to the present. In the dream, the bridge hadn't been surrounded by water, only darkness. Now she saw the drowned feathers, drowned leathered faces of ones created to catch, their faces contorted into screams. Her recurring dream had now been officially contextualized, and it definitely, definitely didn't help. And so, she stared forward, gripping my hand for stability as she started to feel uneasy. I decided then to answer her latest in the long line of questions, with, of course, another question of my own.
Quis custurie ipsos custuries?
We began to walk. 4. Beware the glare of Grandma Grin. She has no fear and loves her kin. Her form is old and thin and cold, with draping robes that flow and fold. Her smile is wide, her eyes define. Stay on your mind, you'll tend to find. Her teeth flash grief that prays to keep. The soul runs deep. Purpose, repeat. Beware the glare of Grandma Grin. She has no fear and craves all sin. She feeds on conflict to survive, and therefore bleeds war to stay alive. As the Birdman continued to move through the sighing wilderness of one of Aquitania's forests of sand, cut into which a road that led west out of sight towards the canyon, he tried hard to ignore the whispering ground. Sentient sand had a tendency to get everywhere. He had fallen many times, got stuck many more times, and now he was convinced that the sand in his ear was whispering to him, telling him how much of a failure he had become. A cop with a promising career, a few commendations on his war record. From that to this endless plane, nothing but a mere puppet on a string.
Don't be so hard on yourself, Tweety Bird.
A voice from close by, behind him, no, ahead, less than 100 meters. The heat was playing with his mind, the previously cold sun now so bright and hot. He stood for a long time. He did not know how long. Then the voice came again, this time from behind. He knew that for sure.
Where you going, Tweety Bird? You seem awfully static.
Nowhere, the Birdman thought, but didn't say.
Been following me? I do apologize. Just needed a second to put my dress on.
You. It is you. The one he sent me to find. Grandma Grin?
Oh, Gigi, please, I don't need Grandma to make this form feel any older than it already does. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Gigi. Oh, you certainly took your time getting yourself together.
You ever come back from the dead, darling?
Not exactly.
Well, let me tell you, it's a bitch. First is the partial self-reformation, actualization, then and only then can the resurrection begin. I'm not even done yet. Come on, we have some work to do. Time's a-wasting and misplacing. Shall I drive?
You know your way around a slider?
Is that what you call a vehicle?
Hey, don't knock, Xenia. She led me to you, you know. The Birdman surveyed his target. There was a lot he didn't know about Grandma Grin. There was a lot more he didn't expect. There were a lot of things that she didn't look like. First off, she didn't look like, well, what he expected. What had he expected? Not this. He knew she had the choice to take many forms. So why had she chosen this one? Was it the one in which she felt most comfortable? First, there was the hat. the wide-brimmed Stetson hat atop Gigi's wiry silvery hair, which itself blew in the vacant canyon breeze. Some of her hair seemed to be part of her hat. It wrapped up around the tall crown, making it silver and shining. Atop the hat, the Cataman-style fringe sat indented with memory. Hardened history. This hat covered, buried what Gigi fears the most. Herself. Her robes were tattered and torn, yet each tear had a story, and therefore a purpose.
"Good evening, Tweety Birdman," she said with a bow, as if they had just met. "Is that my name now?"
"It suits you."
"May I inquire as to your current state of mind? For example, pray the apocalypse just passed, dear. Was darling tweets in some variation of a receipt of a certain kind of enjoyableness? Or did events prove themselves to be of an otherwise cold, dark, freezing, I mean absolutely freezing, very, very chilly, so, so chilly nature?
Oh, will you listen to me? I'm no longer dead."
The Birdman sat agog, staring. When he finally spoke again, his throat was dry and cotton-filled. I don't know. I just remember running or limping, injured, trying to get away.
From the end,
the Birdman thought, but did not say.
"Then I understand that Tweety Bird wasn't within the slovenly boundaries of Fair Acatania from birth and henceforth, where I always know and understand it tends to rain like a bitch."
"I'm human, if that's what you mean. Earth, 21st century.
Cycle tandem, warlock fandom?"
"Warlock fan... Are you okay? Your grandson sent me."
"You know of him. That which descends like red mist which smiles bright."
"Apologies for the fickle accent, dear. Rebirth tends to play havoc with the vocal cords."
"Rebirth. Oh."
The Birdman sighed again. "Red's been in my head for a while. Ever since I left DC, he's been guiding me somewhat. Gave me a kind of map to the plains during the shortest briefing I've ever had, by the way. Then I was just here. Half the time, the life back on Earth. The crime scenes, the virus, the eventual fallout. It all feels like a dream. Maybe I've actually been here all along. Anyway, like I said, your grandson's been showing me the ropes."
"Has he now? And do you feel guided? Do you feel in charge?"
"No, ma'am. I'm lucky to be alive."
"That you are, Robin. That you are.
From your point of view, your point of view, as it were, it's been a matter of weeks since your crisis point in Washington, D.C. America's dark, pale perspective. But in terms of time traveled, it's been a few hundred thousand million years. So, where do we go?"
"Tailfire Falls."
"What is Tailfire Falls?" Jamie asked, attempting and failing to take her darting eyes off the drowned angels. They winked at her. They knew her thoughts wound like an artistry of aged wisdom and hypocrisy. She didn't know how to feel about the winking, so she filed it away for later consideration.
"The precipice between the undercloud where we are now and the wasteland of Saliti. We can't travel there directly because the cycles are out of sync. The best place to resurrect any being is at the end of the universe. It confuses the timelines less. Can you hear it yet?" "The music?"
"Musica de ayuda."
"Yeah, I hear it. I hear something else, though. Beeping. Like a heart monitor or something."
"It's a memory beacon."
"So you brought your grandmother back from the dead and trapped her at the end of the universe?"
"Well, when you say it like that, it makes it sound bad and irresponsible. That's because it is.
We need her. We can't do this alone."
The slider slid with grace and speed along the jagged terrain by the river's edge.
"Pretty bumpy," Robin heard himself say.
"I'd say you're rather smooth, if you don't mind."
"I meant the surface.
It's not exactly easy to navigate.
Oh, you'll manage. You usually do, anyway.
We haven't met, have we? Robin didn't turn his head. Instead, he focused on his primary objective, but he couldn't help noticing the grip on his waist had tightened.
We have now.
Who are you, exactly?
A remnant. Called back to toil in a world that breathes and ages and dies and dies.
You sound like him.
He is no longer worthy of conversation.
He brought you back from the dead. There was a pause.
My point still stands.
You don't like him.
It's not a question of liking. He's my kin. I practically raised him. I told him to smile. You've met him, I trust.
A few times, in a few different ways.
A wisp of gray matter escaped G's lips. Cold smoke weighed down by sulfur.
Gigi coughed. He seems to be sitting in my head, Robin added.
Like a bunny rabbit!
What?
He burrows in, sets up camp, and sometimes he never leaves.
The sky crackled, sparkled, and soared. Acatania's strong gravity tended to pull various asteroid types onto a collision course with the planet. Thanks to the Red Curtain, the planetary shield formerly used to mask Acatania's resonance signal in all other dimensions but its own, known as Acatania Prime. Most of those asteroids tended to be incinerated either on contact with the shield or burn up further down within the planet's atmosphere.
Imagine a world almost triple the size of Earth and with twice as much gravity. This is Acatania Prime, the central belt of the Dimensional Collective, if you like. Before the end, Acatania's strong gravity pulled the vegetation to the surface, which itself would expand higher and expand further than any plant life you might find on Earth. Seeds would simply float in the sky thanks to the dense air molecules. The atmosphere itself was thick and acrid. Gigi used to say it was like breathing soup.
I did not used to say that.
What's that? Robin asked, glancing behind him as the slider followed the path at speed.
Nothing. He's just making stuff up again. It's in his nature.
To make stuff up?
To create.
Well, you certainly created a lot of problems for me. Or at least a lot of work.
I'm work, am I?
I didn't mean it like that. Robin bristled.
Yes, you did, but it's okay. I'm merely cargo. You must not be used to it yet.
Used to what?
Hauling cargo. Isn't that what you do for a living?
No, I'm a cop.
Still?
Well, I was, at least, before the infection.
I see.
What do you see?
Most things. Tell me something. What year was it before he pulled you out and placed you here? Or rather, displaced you.
Gigi's grip tightened on Robin's shoulder. 2017.
Ouch!
Yeah, a lot of people lost.
No, I mean for you!
The slider grinded to a halt. Robin stiffly removed himself from the position he had been seemingly locked in ever since they set off. And he stood to look at Gigi, her dress as dark as a thousand nights in hell, her hair as bright as the rising moon. Hands now clasped under her chin in a thoughtful pose. Her smile as wide as mine, maybe wider. Her long fingers curved over her cheeks. Robin couldn't think when he had seen a longer being in his life. Nails and teeth like razor blades. But nonetheless, a reassuring demeanor that Robin was finding himself warming to, despite his growing questions. Can you be a little more specific?
Specifications are boring, 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 boring.
They're important too, Robin said, trying to ignore the echoey, double voice that seemed to be emanating from her throat. They're important too.
Did my grandson give you exact coordinates to locate me here in this place?
No, like I said, he just gave me a vehicle, a general area to head for, and a map of the Solidi, but outdated, of course.
And you found me on your own.
Yeah.
Now, wasn't that far more exciting?
What did you mean about 2017?
All I said was, ouch.
But you're referring to me specifically.
Well, don't you think it's a bit odd how quickly you've taken to your role as Celestial Courier?
I'm adaptable.
I know.
I've read your journal. When the hell could you possibly have had the time to read 6 months' worth of BlackNet classified documents? I didn't, but my resurrector seems to have spent time familiarizing himself with your personal correspondence. He's in my head. Why would he need to read my journal?
Wow, you really are from 2017, aren't you?
What?
The walls.
What walls?
Everyone has walls in their minds to shield potential invaders from things they wish to keep hidden. Walls usually result from trauma, mostly childhood-based, but not always. You were close to your grandfather, were you not?
Yeah, my dad was the guy he was constantly trying to protect me from. As he got older, he used to talk about some sort of curse on our family. I used to think he was talking about how much my dad always drank, something that my grandfather put to bed in his 50s before retiring from the LA police force, but... You know all of this too, right? Why am I even telling you?
I've got one of those faces.
There was a pause, and then Robin got back on the bike, having stretched enough, reignited the slider, and carried on along the gleaming river's edge. The stars had both the weary travelers captivated for a further few miles, before the seemingly endless and unchanging horizon morphed in the blink of an eye. A low-hanging, partially ruined structure jutted out over the horizon. Some kind of shack, or chattel house. It looked somewhat ominous, and somehow slightly threatening.
What do you think? Robin asked, slowing the slider.
Well, I know what you think.
Of course you do, but really, what do you think?
I think the Saliti has seen fit to grant us questionable respite.
This place can do that?
This place can do a lot of things.
Like bringing people back from the dead.
People, angels, dogs, demons, spiders, lions.
I gotcha. But why would this place suddenly be gifting us a hangout? I'm not sure I trust that.
You're probably wise not to. However, Tailfire Falls is treacherous. Any supplies we can gather might be useful.
I suppose it depends on whether you're prepared to possibly sacrifice your resolve in order to satisfy your curiosity.
Robin sighed. I don't like it, but...
He paused. How far are we?
Specifically? Gigi asked, and Robin could hear the giggle in her voice.
Robin sighed again. Generally.
Not far.
Okay, well, that was very helpful.
I please to aim.
The slider approached the shack cautiously. It growled under its breath while Robin held it at a steady pace, as if he sat astride a giant panther, stalking a potentially overpowering prey. In fact, for a few seconds, or possibly longer, he couldn't be sure. The growling beast sounded a little too real. It no longer had that grinding, mechanical whining sound that he occasionally mistook for a throaty growl. He still felt the handlebar grips between his dry, flaking skin on his fingers, but just to be sure, he gripped tighter. Between his fists, the handlebars seemed to cave inwards, as if the inner supports constructed from chrome had been replaced with malleable clay. What the hell? Robin thought as he looked down.
Shh, Gigi said. That's a good girl.
Robin continued staring at his hands, or rather what they were holding. He was expecting, maybe even hoping, for handlebars. He was hoping that he had suddenly gained the ability to crush steel, with as little effort as it takes to flatten a marshmallow. But instead what he saw was even more curious. Reins. He was holding reins. Not handlebars. Reins.
The travelers were no longer sitting astride a mechanical slider. They were riding a living, breathing predator.
Robin couldn't tell what it looked like from the front given his position, but the beast's back rippled like a sack of pythons. Its legs were covered in armored spikes that seemed to have grown organically. The two front legs he could see were reminiscent of alligator tails. They twitched, poised to leap or perhaps to charge. Robin couldn't tell.
You gonna fill me in?
Yulzenya has been actualized. Let her walk. These are not her first steps.
What about the shack?
She shares your doubts.
Any particular reason?
She can see beyond the normal scope. Everyone seems to be able to do that apart from me.
Then you are blessed, Tweety Bird. Let her walk.
Beneath the travelers, the growling intensified. Then, with a sudden rearing, Zenya began to charge at the shack with tremendous speed. As they approached, Senya turned her head to avoid the rising sand, and that was when Robin saw her eyes. Well, one of them. Irises of purple fire burning bright and cold. Somehow he knew. Bright and cold instead of bright and hot. Pupils as black as a buried city. Robin was suddenly very aware of how much ground clearance they now had compared to the slider. Senya was at least now over 12 feet tall. By the weight of her treads, Robin guessed she also now weighed over 600 pounds. "Did you do this?" Robin asked, turning his head.
"Let's just say I gave you both a little push."
"Dance with me, Jamie." "Why?" "We must step in time with the memory's music. A moderate waltz should do the trick." "You're kidding." "Afraid not. You can fly. Why not dance?" "I don't dance." "Then dance like a lady who doesn't know whether she's dead or not." Dimensions commenced as the first steps were taken. Expanding, contracting, reliving, reacting.
"What the fuck is happening right now?"
"Language," I snapped, resisting the temptation to bite off her nose despite her face.
"If you pay attention to the narration, you might actually learn something." "Always skipping ahead." "Help.
A whispering call from beyond the far wall, somehow louder than both of our voices put together. We waltzed in the direction of the voice, stepping in time with the clicking, grinding gears of the morphing room. The call came again. Then again. As we approached, the cries grew louder, far more guttural. I began to lose my concentration, stepping on Jamie's toe. I didn't miss a beat, and neither did Jamie, responding in time and kind with a flick on the nose.
"What are they keeping up here?"
"The anchor."
"The anchor? The anchor to what?"
"The manifestation. There has to be an anchor point, otherwise the resurrection is incomplete, and they just die and die. All a body can do that is born out of death is die. I need my grandmother in fighting shape."
"So what's all that horrible screaming?"
"Another remnant."
"Stop talking in riddles!"
"'Tis what I do. She taught me how."
"How to grin at your pain. It's in the family name. How to bathe in your eternal shame. And yet remain to kill the same. It's encoded in your fucking brain."
Darkness crept back into the sandstone forests of Tsaliti. The smell in the air began to change. Change and drift. Flow, slow, fall below, and glow. Xenia slowed her charge towards the shrieking shack of old.
"They must be getting close. Him and his lady friend," Gigi said. "The dance has begun."
"What dance? What are you talking about?"
"The Tailfire Waltz, you dingbat!"
"You sound just like him."
"He is my grandson, Bonehole."
"Did you just call me a bonehole?" Senya grunted, still disturbed by the shrieking emanating from the small shed-like structure yards away.
"This is a simple distraction. Or maybe more of an echo."
"An echo? An echo of what? Who?"
"Me."
"What?"
"The other me. The one we don't talk about. Many lives, many deaths, many faces, many traces. Don't admit. Never admit to all of them."
"Are you alright?"
"Just keep going. It's best we leave her in peace. We don't know how wide this one's smile is."
"And that's important."
"What do you think?"
After thinking for a few seconds, Robin decided it was best to change the subject. "I thought Tailfire Falls was a waterfall, not a goddamn waltz."
"It is both and neither. Manifestations, Tweety Bird. We're big on that."
Gigi began to stroke Xenia's soft, silk-like fur.
"Keep going, darling. We're nearly there. Curiosity killed the giant thundercat, you know."
"She's a thundercat now?"
"It's an improvement on Slider, don't you think?"
"No argument there." The travelers continued, with Xenia setting a cautious pace. "So, This place, Robin queried.
The Saliti,
they said in unison. Is what exactly? It's the manifestation after the end.
Resurrection is easy, but to reawaken a celestial being requires manifestation at the end of everything. If you're a being of time, it is necessary. It is, in a sense, the way back. A chance, or better yet, perhaps a choice.
Robin's brow furrowed. What choice? To rebel? To escape?
Depends on the being of time, I suppose.
Robin's belt bleeped. His compass was complaining at him. He unclipped it and held it out in front of him. The casing of the object itself looked fairly unremarkable. At first it had put Robin in mind of a pocket watch. There was even a long silver chain clipped at the midnight point of the device, the other end of which was attached at several points around his waist. But when he clipped open the casing in the present, he was just as captivated as he had been the first time he had opened it. A rainbow of strong, vibrant colors that seemed to follow a specific rhythmic pattern that altered itself depending on Robin's physical position.
Your grandson gave this to me. It helps me navigate this place.
Yes, it guides you through planes of existence that have been, shall we say, dimensionally engineered.
He was babbling about that and some other stuff I couldn't really make out. Like I said, the shortest briefing ever. How does this thing work?
Think of a cross. Not with someone hanging off of it with limpid limbs. A simpering scarecrow. That comes later. Much, much later. No, just a cross. At the top, you have good. On the bottom, you have bad. On the left-hand side of the horizontal line, you have light. And on the right side of the horizontal line, you have dark. Think of that cross like a compass. North, south, east, and west. Never eats off your warlocks. Or if you prefer, good, dark, evil, and light. Then think of that compass as your guide to crossing the plains of Saliti, and occasionally life in general. It is a map of the dimensional collective, scaled down to its smallest possible level.
Makes sense, was all Robin could think to say.
I can see why he likes you. So if you're from 2017, you must be from the Dark Pale perspective.
What?
Never mind.
What do you mean, never mind?
It's not the time. There is no time. We're close.
Well, then there must be time, because we were less close before, and now we're close. Then and now, change equals time. Change through time.
Perceptive perspective, detective.
You can be really creepy, you know that?
Family trait.
Robin decided to shake off the creeping feeling crawling up his spine. He wasn't sure whether he was just imagining it.
Was she tickling him?
I remember, he said. He said, if in doubt, go northeast.
Well, he would say that, wouldn't he?
It's how I found you. It's all I had to go on. But I don't know if that'll help us now.
It's not unhelpful. You're right. The direction is not necessarily applicable, yet relevant.
You really are his grandmother, aren't you?
In a way.
So where do we go? Robin asked, his conscious mind focusing in. That cross you mentioned, the direction he suggested I travel in.
He looked at the compass, matching the direction to the memory.
Northeast. Good. Dark.
Where I came back, Gigi began. Where you saw me reform. It was a special place. It didn't look it, of course. Now, after the end, it's merely scorched rock. But back then...
She trailed off. Was it where you were born? Robin asked, attempting to imagine Akatania Prime in all its glory.
Indeed, in its prime.
Something like that, Gigi said, still sounding distant, both in thought and in voice.
The point is, she continued, sounding more present, where we have to go isn't exactly a happy place. It's a bad place. Bad things happen there. Terrible things.
Then going there really, really doesn't sound like a good idea.
You don't understand.
Then enlighten me.
How many lives has regret saved, do you think?
Well, I don't know. That's not an easy question to answer if you're talking about regret as a concept.
I might be, It's not a conventionally attractive one, but it's not without its charms. How many lives do you think regret has created or prevented?
That's unquantifiable,
Robin said, his tone firm. Is that right? Gigi said. The question was not rhetorical.
I don't know. What's your point?
Would you say regret is light and cheerful, or dark and brooding?
I would say dark and brooding, but I suppose that depends on what the regret is, and the reason for its existence in the first place.
Go on. Robin thought for a moment. He could feel long, bony fingers ascending up his back and caress his shoulders. They were cold, but a welcoming cold that traps, freezes a moment of inexplicable tenderness. He cleared his throat.
Given that you said the place where we have to go is a bad place where terrible things happen, or rather, happened, it stands to reason that we turn east, cut out the north altogether.
The previously playful grip on his shoulders grew tighter. Robin turned his head.
What are you doing? You all right?
I'm conflicted, she said, still at least sounding playful.
How so?
If I could blush, can I blush? I can't remember, but if I can, I probably am, because conflicts of certain kinds make me do that. I've just remembered I can blush. I am now blushing.
Robin sighed, and again I ask, hoping that the answer will bring more clarity to my growing curiosity as to how a being like yourself even possesses clarity and confusion, let alone processes it.
He paused, then took a breath. How so?
I find myself somehow drawn to your understanding, but simultaneously fear its accuracy. I think I understand.
I know you do. That's what's so warming, shall we say. I mean, you don't really understand, not fully, but enough that I'm beginning to understand why he chose you.
Gigi's vibrations seemed to calm. The distance in her eyes grew, pupils reduced. Those stars in those eyes, old ones that die and die.
Robin could tell she was remembering the smiling child, she said, smoke escaping through her teeth, always thinking ahead of the ones ahead of them.
I concur. East. Let's move it, girl, Robin said, matching Xenia's direction to his compass, heading east.
Into the dark.
Jamie could see the entire Undercity from the top of this careworn, morphing subspire. Our rhythmic steps and turns made it possible for her to gaze out of the building's makeshift viewing gallery from all directions. A gallery that was partial, occasional, and constant all at the same time, thanks to the transforming walls and ceilings. The water was filthy, acrid, and the grinding of the building's dimensions seemed to reflect that. The blood of angels. Some remnants, some full-blown borders, cast out and left here to rot. She would have been one of them. Forced to die in disgrace, purely for trying to liberate other magical beings from that dreaded facility.
There's more to it than that, and you know it. A sudden and insistent voice in her mind. Not mine, though. She was used to my taunts by now. This one belonged to her, as did her heart.
Shayira? Jamie said, her concentration wavering. She felt as if she were back in the Devil's Heaven. Or rather, as if one had been substituted for another.
Focus, dear. Your thoughts will get jumbled along with your moments. Try not to look ahead, or behind for that matter. Focus on the now. We are trying to open a way to the end of this perceived universe.
No pressure, then, Jamie said, smiling brightly, attempting to catch her breath.
No pressure at all, dear.
I gazed at the screaming wall on the far side of the room, the one we were trying to access. I gazed to what lay beyond. I gazed at the remnant and said, terrified and crying on the inside, smiling and dancing on the outside.
Perfect. Though Shayira, I turned, stepped, then turned again. Might make the road a little rockier. How can I be lost when I've got nowhere to go?
Gigi?
Help. Help me. Help me.
Search for seas of gold. How come it's got so cold?
These were darkness was enveloping both of them. The ground shook violently as if it would give way beneath Xenia's immense paws. It held, but the sand seemed to replace itself with jagged rock. Cliff edges had formed, and the ground was dampening. They were at least heading in the right direction. Tailfire Falls was very close now, but the darkness was testing them. The Saliti is endless and unforgiving, especially in the Eastern Badlands. The best place for actualization and resurrection, thanks to the level of energy. But if you want to reach the precipice, you must weather the demons, not just inside yourself, but also those inside the ones sending the signal in the first place. If you add up all the failings of two celestial beings of time, one witch and one Chicago PD detective turned celestial smuggler, what you get is something which Robin would latterly describe in his journal as utterly fucked and unaccountably fucked. All Robin could see were the faces of his past. Or at least, he perceived them as that. Rita. Arkham. Danica. Even Grayson. Grayson. Gigi began to giggle. Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. You know him? He's a family friend. She continued to laugh. Laugh just like me. The sound she made reverberated around the darkness, bouncing off of it and coming back at them 10 times louder. Xenia roared. Robin did the same, covering his ears. Grandma Grin could only laugh harder. In the fetid, sweltering darkness, Robin could see the flickering light, perhaps a silhouette in the blackness, as if bodies were moving back and forth in front of the only light source in the seemingly endless vaulted space. It was cold, almost blizzard-worthy. Within Gigi's laughter, he could hear screams, familiar ones. He screamed out for Rita. Then he remembered she was gone, and she wasn't coming back. No, he wouldn't entertain the thought. He would not. Not everyone can be saved. Not everyone, but sometimes an exception could be made. If he made it through this, he would inquire what the procedure may be for resurrecting a mere mortal. Maybe it would be as simple as a wave of the hand. How was he to know? But it must be a hell of a lot easier than this, right? Whatever the hell this was. The darkness swelled above them as they continued to what Robin was assuming was the dancing doorway to the undercloud. He just had to keep moving. Thank God for Xenia's resolve. She pushed on. They all pushed on. The light appeared closer with every step, and sometimes further away. But the loud screams could do nothing but simultaneously terrify and motivate them. Closer and closer, Xenia roared as the light blared in their vision. It seemed as if they all roared as they struggled through the light, pushing and shoving the darkness aside. Then they fell, and all the world swam away for a while. When he woke, Robin didn't immediately open his eyes. There was an instant pain. Almost every inch of his body throbbed in complaint. The room he was in was still dark, but not as dark as what he had just seemingly survived. He was sure nothing would ever be as dark as that. Ever. Next, he heard a soft growl, perhaps even a purr coming from above him. His eyes flickered open. All he saw was blurriness, and so he decided to use his ears while his eyes geared up to reveal their secrets. He heard the passage of water, bubbles, faint dripping in the distance, the crackling of splintered glass, the dragging of metal underfoot. He spread his gloved hands on the surface below him, allowing the skin of his exposed fingers to come into contact with the ground. Cold metal, possibly rusted. A structure beneath the surface. An old one? A submarine, perhaps? Suddenly he felt a hand caress his skull. Then he heard a voice he knew on some level he recognized. Where do you get your hair gel? asked Jamie Mortimer, peering into Robin's field of vision, the blurriness now subsiding. What? Robin spluttered, beginning to cough. Can I have some? She asked, looking deadly serious. She began to squeeze his skull and tug at his hair. It's impenetrable.
What do you need with hair wax, bat face? Came another voice, one he did recognize.
Wouldn't you like to know? Jamie replied, a smile crossing her face. She did not take her eyes off Robin's hair.
You wouldn't, dear? Came a third voice, not dissimilar from the second, higher pitched and far less composed. You really, really wouldn't.
Gigi? Robin said. He shot up. The pain grew louder in his skull. He gripped his head. He felt a cold, stroking hand on his neck. The coolness soothed him.
In the flesh, again. For the first time, again.
Take it easy, Jamie said. You've had a rough ride. Gigi was resting on Jamie's shoulders, almost embracing her, and I was pleased to see that Jamie was not recoiling. That's the understatement of the century. Where are we?
The bathysphere, heading out of the Undercity to rejoin the surfaces. Take it in while you can, detective. It's not a sight people of Earth get to see very often. The mist in his eyes cleared, and he gazed through the porthole at the dead Undercity, descending ever deeper as they rocketed their way to the surface. No words escaped him, and so I prompted a response. Shall I fill you in over a drink, detective? Robin turned his head, catching both Jamie's addicting icy stare and Gigi's glittering stars, then finally into my wild, green eyes, glowing with purpose, a smile in their reflection. How about we make it 10?
The first was young Miss Grin. She tried not to let him in, so she stabbed him with a flattened soul. That's how her crimes begin. The next was Baby Grin, a crying at the door. He fought off his attacker and then simply was no more. The next was Grandpa Grin, all set to light the pyre, yet the spirit stalked behind him and betrayed his dark desires. Next, Grandpa grabbed the shovel, his inner smile forgave, yet all it took was one round look before he fell into his grave. The last was Grandma Grin, the grey harrower of sin. She looked round disappointed and slowly poured her gin. Next, she stood and counted from 2 to 4, then 6. So many she'd attempted afore the trigger clicks. Finally, Grandma sat to pray, long limbs and grin unfurled. She clasped her hands together and then remade the world.
If you're a podcast clown like I am, you must have dreamed about starting your own. Let me tell you, my dreadful darlings, it's never easy, but it's one of the best decisions I ever made. It was either that or waste away in my own subjective ascendance. Of course, it can be more than just a little overwhelming to know how to get started. Buzzsprout can help you launch your podcast professionally and in style, linking you with all of the major podcasting platforms such as Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and much, much more. Join us up in the buzzing, sprouting podcast cloud to breathe in the renowned analytical sound of the accurate analysis and promotion tools provided. Follow the link in the show notes below to start your journey and receive a $20 Amazon gift card. We're waiting for you. Buzzsprout, the best and excitingly prettiest way to start a podcast.